You're listening to There Ought to Be a Law, the Center for Auto Safety podcast with Executive Director Michael Brooks, Chief Engineer Fred Perkins, and hosted by me, Anthony Simino. For over 50 years, the Center for Auto Safety has worked to make cars safer. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, world.
Yes. So, hey, guys, something we've talked about a number of times in this show, I got to see it witnessed firsthand outside my window the other day. The baby being trapped in a locked car.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay, it turned out fine because I live in Manhattan and the fire department's like they're always within a few minutes away. But we hear all these sirens, look outside the window, and in a Mercedes SUV, you see the fire department using little wedges to pry open the front doors, and they're using these wire hooks to try and pop the handles. It took them a while. Baby was fine. Baby slept through the entire thing. The car alarm goes off, the kid still passed out. But it was my second incident I got to see out my window that day. Other one was a two people trying to make the same left turn at the same time. Never ends well.
That's no. Yeah. Hey, my daughter in Philadelphia, outside of Philadelphia, experienced one of the things that we were talking about, or at least a close neighbor. A Kia in a garage burst into flames spontaneously and burned the house down.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Everyone okay?
Everyone's okay. House is completely gone.
Oh, it's horrible. Hey, for those of you who just tuned in, this is not the world's most depressing podcast because all of them have happy endings. Everyone gets out alive. So let's, we have this thing called the Consumer Autonomous Vehicle Bill of Rights. I'm working on it for, say, over a year. Is that about right? Yep.
That's okay. Right.
It's good.
And hey, there's this other group called the Autonomous Vehicle Industry Association. Oh, they use very nice blue and green color combinations as if it was the web back in the late 90s. And they have something called the Trust Principles to advance the safe operation of AVs in the communities across America. This is corporate nonsense. Just putting that out there. They're like, hey, these auto safety nuts have something. I bet we can come up with something better. Ooh, remember fourth grade where you had to put a word and create an acronym based off of it? What's a good word we can use? Lies. No, that's not going to be it. Bullshit. No, too many things to go with. Trust. And so they have their trust principles. And my favorite part, as we have a link to this, is throughout it, it's peppered by we'll disclose information as required by law. Every little thing, we'll disclose enough as required by law. Realizing that there's very little laws around what they have to do. And as we've just talked about autonomous vehicles, it's the Wild West, but they'll disclose whatever you need as required by law.
Well, the industry trots out these bullshit organizations whenever they confront, public disinterest or distrust. There was one called the AV Safety Coalition that was popped up a couple of years ago, which is equally bullshit, but it seems to be a vehicle for getting sub rosa information into some of the standards, because it seems to be a technical standards group when in fact it's nothing but an advertising group. And the part of this AVIA trust principle that I thought was notable is their first sentence, which this says, AVs are being developed to make America's roads safer, offer additional mobility options to people who do not currently have them, increase accessibility opportunities to people with disabilities, and ease supply chain challenges by making goods movement more efficient and sustainable. But the truth is that AVs are being developed to increase the rate of return on investment by the automotive industry. The rest is just aspirational window dressing. And I guess if Goebbels showed that if you make a lie long enough and persistent enough, people will start to accept it.
Yeah, that's what they've been doing, is repeating this, the same thing over and over again. I mean, a lot of what's behind this trust us pitch, it's something that the industry has used, for decades now, well over 50 years. And mainly when they want to fend off regulatory action by NHTSA or a law by Congress that might actually hold their feet to the fire and make them do some of the things they're saying they're going to do. So, you know, it's a big reason why in Europe, you know, they have a different type of certification system than we have in America. They have, you know, in Europe where the authorities can actually look over some of the vehicle performance and the vehicle tests before these parts or the vehicles are approved. In America, we have self-certification where we have to trust the manufacturers. And it's why, you know, for instance, a modern example might be why it's taken so long to get good automatic emergency braking into vehicles. We'll talk about that more later today, but it's taken well over a decade to, you know, require a technology that's proven to save lives and to require it to go into vehicles. So, you know, I guess our point to the AVIA, which is basically, you know, Waymo, Cruise, Aurora, Zoox, all of the big companies coming together and forming a policy group that does things like testify before Congress on their behalf and other things, you know, it all comes down to action speaking louder than words, right? So far, all the actions from industry show they want to proliferate the tech and make money off of it more than they want to ensure safety. And you know, the public trust has been relatively stable, or mistrust, I should say, you know, at around, you know, 2/3 of the public since they started putting these things on the road. People aren't being persuaded, and that's not because they're not telling us the right things, it's because they're not showing us anything. They're not showing us the data proving these vehicles are safer than the really bad human they keep talking about. They're not showing us how these things are going to be life-changing for people with disabilities or people who lack mobility options. You know, they're not showing us how these things are going to be sustainable, especially when they're clogging up roads and causing even more traffic. So, you know, we keep getting all of these, like Fred says, aspirational statements from the industry. But ultimately there's no proof behind anything they're saying. So,
well, let's get back to the principles, Michael. Here are the principles. Okay. Spells out their acronym: transparent interactions with government officials and the public, responsible integration of AVs into communities, and deep engagement with law enforcement and first responders. Upholding the highest cybersecurity and privacy standards, safety-first culture and governance, transportation policies that will increase safety and public trust of AVs. Well, come on. If they were serious about this, they would have done all that before they put the damn cars on the road. They're coming in after the fact saying, oh, now that we've got these things out there, we might as well spend some energy trying to make them actually work safely and not kill people. It's astonishing that only now, after years of operating on the public roads, they're finally calling for development of what seems to be the bare minimum of some kind of standards that should have been in place long, long ago.
Well, Fred, so how does this compare to the Consumer AV Bill of Rights? So one of the things they have is the AVIA commits to continuing robust engagement with policymakers at the federal and state levels on the cybersecurity and privacy practices of AV operators. Now, if I'm drunk and I read that, I'm like, that sounds great. Yeah. But as a sober person, I'm kind of like, someone's trying to pull a fast one on me. So with something like that, like, how do we cover that in the Consumer Autonomous Vehicle Bill of Rights?
What we have are requirements. We don't have aspirational statements saying maybe someday, and God willing, and the creek don't rise, we're going to do something the right thing. What we've established with the AV Bill, Consumer AV Bill of Rights, affectionately known as CAVBOR, is a set of requirements for both engineering requirements, minimum requirements, and also for legal requirements to govern the operation of the AVs on the streets. And these are not maximum standards, these are minimum standards before we think they should even be allowed to be tested on the roads. So I encourage people to go back and read the AV Bill of Rights in that context. And we will be publishing an updated version here in a few days. So it's a good time to check in on that.
one thing they have listed in there that I think all of us will agree with 100%. And I know you're like, well, okay, what's the punchline? No, it's not. It's increased funding for NHTSA and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. I think we're all for that, right? So we can agree on something.
Absolutely.
Yes.
There we go.
But the difference is we say that and mean it. They say that, and then some of the folks on that list will lobby against additional funding for NHTSA. There's no question about it.
Wait, are they talking out of two sides of their mouth?
No.
Three sides.
Oh, boy. Wow. Huh. It's a new Picasso. On a different tact of from an actual U.S. senator, someone who actually proposes laws, because the AVIA...
Yeah, this is for multiple senators.
Multiple senators, because the AVIA, it sounds impressive. It sounds like, hey, you know, Cargill, we make good things to life. Monsanto, we're not poisoning the entire planet. We're hugging you with blue-green colors. This is from out of Senator Markey's office. I think he's the lead on that. I can say that, right? He's the lead? Okay, great, because the headline is, in all caps, I don't know why they do this, Senators Markey, Blumenthal lead call for stronger action from federal regulator on autonomous vehicle safety after high-profile crashes. Thank you. In their letter, the senators wrote, we cannot allow partially automated driving systems and automated driving systems to accelerate the road safety crisis. NHTSA must take firm control of the wheel and steer manufacturers towards prioritizing safety. It's poetic.
Yeah. And they've gone through, basically, there's six senators involved in this effort. It's Senator Markey, Blumenthal.
Warren, Sanders, Lujan, and Peter
Bernie,
Welch.
Yes. Lujan and Peter
Lujan,
Welch.
Sorry.
And so they all signed a letter to NHTSA saying, hey, look, we need to get some things done here. NHTSA's kind of, you know, in limbo on many of these issues and hasn't taken a lot of firm steps. NHTSA's collecting data right now. But we'd love the agency, and we want the agency to consider some policy actions to make autonomous vehicles safer. You know, the industry and their trust principles is basically saying, yeah, we're gonna do these things, but ultimately we don't want you putting any of this into law or regulation. We don't want our feet to be held to the fire. And the senators are saying, look, we need concrete steps here. And a lot of these steps are things that you've heard about on this podcast before. You know, they want to geofence vehicles or restrict vehicles to their operational design domain, which is basically, you know, if you're gonna put an autonomous vehicle on the road, you can't let it drive in places where it's not ready to drive. And this is kind of a confusing area, because they want to have NHTSA look into the confusion around things like autopilot, full self-driving, naming vehicles in ways that imply they have a lot more capability than they actually do, which makes drivers fall into the trap we've talked about on a number of occasions, the level 2 or level 3 traps, where drivers overestimate the vehicle's capabilities and it gets them into lots of trouble. They want better and more transparent data and publicly transparent data. NHTSA right now is collecting a lot of data on autonomous vehicle and conditional automation in its standing general order data, but a lot of that is, you know, coming to the public and being redacted. The crash descriptions, for instance, are being redacted. So the while NHTSA may be getting some pretty good data there, the public's not getting much. And NHTSA needs more and better data under the standing general order. So right now, the standing general order was just, you know, it's an order from NHTSA to the manufacturers requiring them to report crashes, essentially involving this, you know, AV technology or, you know, advanced driving assistance technology. What it's not is a permanent law or regulation. You know, if a new administration comes in next January, they could eliminate the entire program with a stroke of a pen, and the government wouldn't be collecting any data. So that's something that needs to be put into law. And then a few other things they want, you know, more caution before you exempt vehicles and allow them to go on the road. You know, you need more information on anything you're exempting from federal safety standards, but particularly autonomous vehicles. They want to regulate, you know, remote assistance operators. We've talked about some of the issues there with latency and other problems. And they want, you know, new standards. We don't have any federal motor vehicle safety standards on autonomous vehicles, and we want federal vehicle standards that every vehicle has to comply with. If it's going to say, hey, I'm an automated vehicle, I'm going to drive you, it's going to have to comply with certain standards to ensure safety. So these, you know, this initial segment of the podcast is basically saying, you know, there are people out there who want concrete solutions, and there are people who aren't. Who don't want concrete solutions. And the people who don't want concrete solutions are the ones who stand to make the most money off of it, surprisingly.
I also want to proudly point out that two of these senators are from the great state of Massachusetts. Just you know, for your information.
That liberal Northeast nonsense.
I love it. My people.
So in this letter, it seems almost that they're, you know, when they wrote this, they had in mind one specific company who's kind of egregious in what they do. So one of my favorites in here is restrict driving systems to the roads they are designed for, or also known as operating design domain. Now, we've talked about Ford and GM and their cruise systems where they are restricted. We've talked about Mercedes-Benz and their level 3 system where it only works in Nevada and certain conditions. What's the company that just says, fuck it, we're going to do whatever we want. We're going to lie. We're going to say this is the magical car system that does all sorts of stuff and just let you run anywhere. Is there anybody doing that?
Yeah, we're all aware of who that is. And that's, you know, that's one of the problems that, you know, this letter is being sent to NHTSA. There's a question as to whether NHTSA has any authority to regulate, you know, the statements and that confusion part of this. You know, that's something that traditionally would be, you know, an unfair deceptive trade practice that's regulated by the Federal Trade Commission. They're the government agency that is responsible for, you know, investigating any type of confusing marketing or marketing and or advertising that might lead people to believe the wrong thing, that might contribute to fraudulent issues and all sorts of things. But NHTSA has continually maintained that that is something that is outside of their purview. The FTC has been hesitant to act. We don't know if that's because there's a massive, powerful billionaire on the other side of things that they don't want to take on, or if it's because they really don't feel they have authority. But at this point, someone needs that authority and someone needs to exercise it, because this is an issue with Tesla that's gone on for far too long. And people are continually and still buying Teslas thinking they're going to drive them, as we'll probably see in some of our other news this week.
I'm going to get right into that, as a matter of fact. From Jalopnik, Tesla driver who trusted autopilot charged with killing a motorcyclist. The Tesla driver who told police he was, quote unquote, putting the trust in the machine to drive for him, was inattentive to the road in front of him and was only brought back to reality when he heard a bang as the car lurched forward. That bang is, I hit somebody.
That you never saw.
Right. And he's, you know, he was not impaired by drugs or alcohol, but putting the trust in the machine to drive for him. And this is an issue we've talked about 1,000 times. Why would you do that? I don't know. Maybe if you're spending extra money on something called full self-driving or autopilot, that you think, maybe it lives up to those names. Does not.
Yeah, and this is something, there are a lot of issues in this crash that have been things we've talked about. One of them, importantly, is motorcycles. Autopilot seems to have difficulty detecting motorcycles, and frankly, that's not something that we think is going to change in the near future without some push from the federal government. And NHTSA's automatic emergency braking rule, for instance, they left out motorcycles as one of the things that has to be detected. Right now, you know, your automatic emergency braking is looking for the rear of other vehicles, but it seems to struggle on, you know, different types of vehicles, like a motorcycle where there's only one tail light, they're struggling to capture a lot of the taillights. And and this is something.
Yep. Sorry, the AEB rule, like, well, I know we'll get to this a little later, but it exempts motorcycles from this?
It doesn't exempt. It just doesn't. It doesn't require manufacturers to detect. One of our big criticisms of it, it doesn't require manufacturers to put AEB in vehicles that's able to detect motorcyclists, cyclists, and other types of vehicles in other situations. It's primarily to prevent a vehicle from crashing into the rear of another vehicle.
Another four-wheeled vehicle.
And the technology, I don't know if it's because the technology isn't quite to the point where they can't detect a motorcycle versus a car. I mean, cars are obviously a bigger target or a bigger, you know, more easily detectable.
This particular motorcycle was stationary on the side of the road, right?
I believe so. No, I think
it didn't. I didn't get that.
I thought I read that in there.
No, he was
rear-ended him at speed is what the article states, which implies they were moving.
Yeah, as far as I can tell, it stayed in its lane and it just drove over him.
Not that would excuse it, but I was.
Right.
Curious about that detail. This actually bleeds over into something that we were talking about last week, which is that two labs, I now have learned, have been investigating the time it takes a human being to take over from the automatic system. So even if you're alert, and using a level three or a level three like system, Tesla's autopilot, for example.
That's a level two system.
And you saw the motorcyclist. It could take you well over 10 seconds, as a normal human being, to recognize the situation and take over for the vehicle that has a lapse in its own control system. This is simply not enough time for a typical human being to adjust and avoid whatever the problem is that the AV system failed to detect. This may be an issue as well with this. It could well be that the person actually did see the motorcycle and simply didn't have time to respond. We don't know all those details yet.
Well, in this case, the guy said, I think he was reading a book.
Yeah.
He was like, I'm just letting the machine do it. But this ties back into the egregious examples we've seen from Tesla with calling things really aspirational names for what they're not. And this is causing, you know, Senators Blumenthal and Markey and whatnot to come up with saying, hey, we need some real strong regulations around this. And it comes back to something I've asked both of you before. Is this so with legacy manufacturers, Ford, GM, Mercedes and whatnot, they're at least trying to say, hey, we're going to disengage the system if we can sense that you're not doing this. So they'll actually put in systems that say, hey, this doesn't work here. This doesn't work here. This doesn't work here. You're not paying attention. We're off. Because they've been around for 100 years and they've had the regulators like beat the crap out of them repeatedly for doing dangerous things.
Not just the regulators, the lawyers as well.
Well, yeah, they've had
ultimately, yeah. What
regulators class action? Yeah, or is just Tesla just doesn't have enough experience with getting taken to court and dragged?
I mean, Elon Musk seems to have a fetish for being sued, but the case that they settled recently, the Huang case that we talked about a couple of weeks ago of the guy, the Apple engineer in California. Yep. Yeah, who ran into the thing. That was the first case I was aware that they've ever settled involving cars. And I know there are just dozens of other cases out there right now that are progressing through the courts because Tesla's unwilling to settle. So I don't know. What does that tell you? Right. In this case, the driver was charged with vehicular homicide and is out on $100,000 bail. So I hope that was a good book.
Right. So what happens next? Not quite this podcast for it, but what happens next with the Markey bill? Like, how does a bill become a law?
Well, it's not a bill yet. It's a letter to NHTSA, and essentially, you know, what the role of Congress is in this situation is oversight of NHTSA. And so if NHTSA continues to not wrap its head around some of those areas and start on good regulations, I would ask them to start on a regulation around geofencing and operational design domain yesterday, if they could. That's a critical standard that obviously vehicles aren't quite meeting at this point.
Well, NHTSA has the authority. NHTSA has the authority to do everything that has been requested, right? There's no question about that.
Yeah, and that's what essentially the oversight role is. Congress is saying, hey, get your act together on these, or we're going to start pursuing legislation to make you get your act together in these areas.
Got it. Okay. And what's been NHTSA's response so far? Hey, I'm just the current acting administrator.
Well, you know, they just sent the letter, so it'll be a while before the response. But I imagine the response will be, you know, hey, we're working on this, and yeah, that's the typical response.
So just wrapping this one up, they have a great line in there. It says, public roads are not a sandbox for manufacturers or operators to play in, and regulatory agencies like NHTSA should be highly cautious about providing lax pathways onto the road for dangerous vehicles, which I think is perfect. And clearly, they're all fans of this show. As you are at home, go to autosafety.org, click on donate. Click it once, click it twice, but enter in your credit card details, or else just clicking on it just it's just pointless.
Yeah, so. And at public roads right now, you know, I hate to say it, they are kind of that sandbox.
All right, just because I think we need a little light break here, a little upbeat moment here. Hey, Cybertruck. That's all I have to say. Just that. No. This is there's a guy, a Jalopnik article. A guy takes his Cybertruck to the car wash, and then the car's like, yeah, we're done. Like, the screens go black. It doesn't work anymore. And he had to call up tech support, and they're like, who is this? Are you messing with us? And he looks, and I don't think he gets anybody. He reads the manual. Good for him. Tells him some weird key combination on a steering wheel to press, like down, down, up, A, B, left, right, and to reboot. And he does all this stuff, and then nothing happens. Or at least he thinks nothing happens, because there's no message on the screen. And then, I don't remember how many hours later, 5 hours later, the car's like, all right, I'm back. Like, what? Like, how?
There's no explaining some of that.
Yeah, don't get your Cybertruck wet, people.
I think the weirdest part of this story is that, you know, you can have your warranty voided by taking your Cybertruck into a car wash and not putting it in car wash mode. Yes, there's an actual car wash mode that you have to scroll through all of your endless menus on your touchscreen and put your vehicle into car wash mode before you enter a car wash. I don't know, that sounds really odd to me. I mean, having grown up in the South where big thunderstorms, I just have to think, are going to present all sorts of water and spray challenges for vehicles that require them to be sealed. It just seems that there's not a real good way here, not a real good answer for an owner. Do you know when you buy a vehicle that it's got this, you know, car wash mode that you have to turn on before you go into a car wash? How do you figure that out? How do you avoid voiding your warranty because you didn't put it in car wash mode? There are a lot of questions here that make me, you know, less likely to own a Tesla than before I read this article. It was already a pretty low chance anyway.
As best I can tell, car wash mode, the only thing it does is it turns off the windshield wiper.
It looks like it
puts the car in
seals
neutral.
Seals ports or something. I don't know. I don't understand the warranty issue there.
I think there's a built-in umbrella that pops up and you know covers the car to keep it from getting wet.
So your ego doesn't get moist.
Absolutely. And you can choose the color. I think that's one of the options they've got available for a subscription fee.
Oh boy. Let's move on to something serious. Canada. Yep, We've all heard about it. We've all seen it on maps, and you're like, what is that giant place with only four states? This is bizarre. Okay, maybe there's seven and they're provinces. Doesn't matter. Canada not only has free healthcare, but the Canadian province of British Columbia has banned self-driving vehicles that exceed an SAE autonomy rating level of 2. So you can't get your Waymos, your GM Cruise, your Mercedes-Benz EQS with level 3. And that's about it right now. You can still get your Teslas, people. I'm sorry, they're not autonomous vehicles. But
yeah,
this is,
they don't even meet level 3. So yes, Tesla owners are okay.
Yep.
For now.
But bro, my car drives itself. It made a left-hand turn down the street and then it got me off the off-ramp. You got to go out. You got to try it. Okay? You got to try this car. You got to try. Yeah, okay.
Well, there's two things to say about this from my perspective. One is that there's no federal or national authority that verifies that a vehicle is level 2 or level 3 or any other level. So it can be whatever level the manufacturer wants to claim that it is. So with a simple declaration by any of the car companies currently putting out level 3, that no, it's not really level 3, it's really level 2 plus, they can avoid the penalties associated with this. The other thing is, again, something that we talked about before, a couple of laboratories have been looking at the transition from automatic controls to manual controls on these cars. And both of the laboratories that are doing that I'm aware of have determined independently that it is simply too dangerous to test this maneuver on public roads using actual live human beings and real cars. So they do it with simulators. My observation is that if it's too dangerous to test using controlled circumstances, why in the world is it safe enough to put on the road with untrained observers and no controls? This is inherently very hazardous. So, well, hats off to the BC government.
Well done. Yeah, there's an article.
They don't have any level threes there yet either. So, they're essentially saying, don't come here. In some respects, they're, I think, and as far as I know, the only level 3 that we're aware of is just starting to go on sale in Nevada and California, the Mercedes.
Yeah, so have you guys signed up to get your Mercedes, your EQS or S-Class sedan?
Did they make an economy model?
The Tesla full self-driving is in all respects a level 3, except for Tesla's declaration that it's a level 2. If you go into the definitions, it's clearly a level 3 automobile. They're just using sleight of hand to say, well, no, it's not. And we don't have to respond to laws regulating level 3. But it is. So I think that, there may be a step here where BC government has to step up and say, hey, we're looking at you, Tesla. But I think clearly that those vehicles fall under the intent of what BC is trying to ban.
Stay attention to this show and this segment called Canada Watch. Will they build a wall or not? Yeah, so the Mercedes has it's selling these in Nevada and California, I believe, the only place they're allowed to, these level 3 systems. And what I like about these, this is kind of neat, their system they call Drive Pilot. When drivers have Drive Pilot enabled, these cars will illuminate turquoise lights on their side mirrors, headlights, and taillights to let other drivers and law enforcement know they're operating autonomously and they have more money than they should. I think it's good that it's great that it's announcing to everybody, hey, this is what's happening here. But okay, so it's got these lights and it's letting people know, my car broke the law. Sorry, officers, my car did it. See, the turquoise lights were on. Give my car the ticket. They still haven't figured that one out, have they?
Well, I think it's a good idea to, let people know and be afraid and be very afraid and try to avoid these things. It's also a good idea for the police to know that if these turquoise lights are on, that they have to be very wary about approaching the car because there's no way in the world of knowing what it's going to do. But as far as avoiding responsibility goes, I'm not sure turquoise is the way to do that.
What color do you think, more of a cerulean blue?
Yeah, that'd be good, I think. But, There should be, and people have talked about distinctive signals that show people when a car is being driven by a computer rather than a human being.
Signs that pop out
There's
saying, "Look,
no,
Ma, no hands."
I don't think there's any standard yet that says this is what you should do, but I think that, what Mercedes has done is a good step, despite the fact that the reason they've done it is not a good step.
All right. Okay, so we've covered Canada, we've covered Mercedes. So Fred, how are you feeling about doing some Tao time?
Oh, sure. Let's do
You've
it.
now
Let's
entered
do
the
that.
Tao
This
of
Tao
Fred.
one I'm really looking forward to because it's titled Shrooms and Cars. Death by AI Reliance. Boom, 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 boom.
Dun, 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 dun. Not the kind of shrooms people are thinking about, but that's okay.
Ooh.
This is really a discussion about the fault of or the limitations of AI. So I'm going to do a little background here. AI, for our listeners, is no one thing. There's no world standard of what AI is and what it's not. There are several types and a lot of different implementations. So what's called weak AI is what you've confronted in your daily life. So Siri, Alexa, AV, these are all called weak AI. And strong AI would be like HAL from 2001: A Space Odyssey. I'm dating myself because a lot of people haven't seen that movie who are suffering from being young, but never mind. So weak AI is what we all confront. But weak AI is evidenced by machine learning, or it can be deep learning. And machine learning is one or two hidden layers of weighted logical nodes, interconnected, blah, blah, blah. Deep learning is three or more layers, typically hundreds. Either type, though, can produce spurious or hallucinatory results. And this article actually looks at people who are using ChatGPT and similar AI capabilities to produce books that have lethal imperfections in them. In particular, they're looking at poisonous mushrooms that are misidentified and field characteristics of those mushrooms that are also misidentified. And yet the books are readily available and they're pumped out by machines and put onto Amazon for distribution to the public, even though they're actually very hazardous. They misidentify a lot of the mushrooms and it has lethal consequences or can have lethal consequences for people eating poisonous mushrooms based on the recommendations of the AI. So why do we care about that here? Because all of these break the human-oriented paradigm of unambiguous traceability between inputs and outputs. So for example, when you get into your car, one of the things you want to do is start your car, right? And so there's a button or a key or something that you push or turn to start the car. And the car starts. And so there's a nice one-to-one relationship. But the other side of that is that if you confront a car that's running, you want to know that somebody did turn it on purposefully. You don't want to know that it's not running by itself. You want to have that bilateral relationship between the inputs and the outputs that are desired. The problem with machine learning is that you don't have that because the relationship between the input and the output is murky and it's not humanly decipherable because it's built into the machine logic. So the machine is doing something in there. We talked about before that it's acting kind of like a murmuration of starlings. It's just somehow there's this group logic that mysteriously relates one thing to another. But you can't really have the kind of relationship you've got between pushing the start button in your car and having the car actually start. So this book is a great example of that. And the book talks about how, or I should say, the publication by Public Citizen that describes these books and the problems of these books talks about how this misidentification occurs, how frequent it is, and how, despite the fact that it used AI or machine learning, you still end up with results that are very bad and potentially lethal. It's not to say that their AI is inherently bad. In fact, the last paragraph of the article is, I think, very revealing. It says, this is not to say that AI systems directed by knowledgeable technologists can't or won't leverage these technologies to benefit individuals in society in ways that would not be possible without them. It is, however, to insist upon refusing to overlook the essential human role in directing these technologies toward human goals, and to suggest skepticism when the goal of maximizing profits encourages exaggerating the technology's capabilities. This actually gets us right back to Tesla. We were talking earlier about Tesla trying to promote sales. And what I've been reading is that they don't have sufficient capacity right now to develop new models that they can put on the market. They talk about doing that, but they've apparently abandoned the idea of getting even a lower price model out there. So instead, they're reverting to saying, well, we're going to use AI at every level of controls to make our full self-driving even better. That is something that is appealing to the public, I guess. And they're trying to drive sales by saying, look, we're done with all this human crap. We're going to go to AI forward and backward and everything will be great. But I think it's important for the public to realize and for their potential customers to realize that all of these AI implementations are inherently fraught with ambiguities. They're fraught with hallucinations. And you cannot get a car, you cannot get an AI-driven car ready to handle unexpected, critical, or lethal situations by training it on data that's produced by cars that are not going through those situations. So no matter how long you drive down a sunny, straight highway with no water on it, it's not going to prepare you for a child running out in front of the car on a rainy day. Just, it isn't going to happen. You don't have enough data to do that. And all of these systems, all of these weak systems that they're talking about, which includes the autonomous vehicle logic that's driving these cars, need to be trained by humans, need to have lots of training. And you simply cannot get enough examples of critical situations to train these vehicles in any way that's going to allow them to project behavior onto some situation that they haven't seen yet. Simply isn't going to work. So you are, you know, as long as everything is fine, you're having a great time having AI drive your car. The problem is that the problems occur when things are not going fine and when you have unusual situations. The unique capabilities of human beings to take what they've learned and project it onto a critical situation very, very rapidly is something that you're not ever going to see in our lifetimes anyway on an AI-driven vehicle. So that's the lesson from misrepresenting mushrooms that brings up, that has been brought up by Public Citizen for the world at large and AVs in particular, as they confront the proliferation of AI systems into the control of the vehicles. Ooh, that was a long sentence or two.
That was good. Okay, not breathe.
That has a lot of implications. I mean, it's not just, you know, it looks like people are essentially saying, hey, AI, write me a book on mushroom foraging that I can sell on Amazon, and then popping it on Amazon without, you know, the typical human curation process that would check for things like whether a dangerous mushroom and a safe one are identified properly.
Yeah, yep. That's right. That's exactly what they were doing. And that's exactly what the car companies are doing as well, by putting AV controls under the control of AI systems that have never been vetted, that have never been checked by any third parties, that are opaque to human understanding.
This is one of the articles that the Tesla fans always like to make, is that every Tesla has been collecting all of this data, and they're collecting all of this data, and then they run it through some magical neural network processing, but without those gross, smelly humans to actually review and identify and see these edge cases and explain what would happen in there, it's useless. It's not as helpful as people like to think it is.
Yeah, and when people have a crash, typically lots and lots of factors contribute to that crash, and And it probably can never be exactly replicated by any other person. So how you can generalize from one into another from all this data that Tesla has, by the way, surreptitiously collected from your vehicle and projected onto other vehicles, is something that cannot be easily qualified with any kind of statistics that anybody can really understand. You know, you're putting your life in the hands of the statistical representation that some unknown machine or unknowable machine has put onto a logical process that's buried deep within the guts of a computer somewhere that no human being will ever fully understand. Well,
trust the machine.
Trust the machine, yeah. Now, I'm still waiting for us to get these free tests so we can test them out ourselves.
Well, I can't get you a free Tesla, but I can get you a free month of full self-driving beta. That's right. If you act now, I'll get you full self-driving beta for 1 month, 30 days in a row. That's right. Make you, your passengers, and every other road user of the road an unwitting test subject. Anyway, a friend of mine who's blind, he's been experimenting with ChatGPT to have him read restaurant menus to him. And he's like, it's great. He's like, I'm having it read stuff and it's inventing things on the menu. He's like, this sounds incredible. It has strawberries in this, whatnot. And he's trying to order it. And they're like, what are you talking about? And he summed it up best with, I think, these AI models, the way they currently are. They're like a five-year-old. They're just going to like, hey, make things up to make you feel better. This is what happened. And then there was a cape and there were strawberries involved. And it's, I mean, hallucinating at a restaurant. Actually, hallucinating at a restaurant, that could actually be really bad for people with some sort of food allergies.
I'll give you an example from my life. I was in Japan in a restaurant, and I was using Google Translate because I don't speak Japanese. Oh. And I looked at the cover of the menu, which was basically a drawing of trees in winter, you know, interconnecting yep. branches, and you can figure out what that looks like. And the Google Translate was finding Japanese characters in that drawing of branches that were interlinked and crossing over on the cover of the menu. It was very interesting to see those words emerge from this completely random information. But it was one example I've had of a hallucination from AI that was very striking.
I was in a Japanese restaurant a long time ago, and I'm pretty sure they fed me whale blubber, and they laughed at it. It was disgusting. Don't eat whale blubber. Go to autosafety.org and click donate. Do that. Tell your friends. 5 stars. Share it around. You've all been great with that so far. We appreciate you so much. But continue. The more the merrier. Be safe. Wear your seatbelt. And let's continue onwards. All right. I guess it's time for recalls. Let's do some recalls. How's that sound? Hey, let's start off with a little company called, ready? Wait for it. Right, wait. Tesla. That's right. Tesla has recalled 3,878 vehicles, something called a Cybertruck. And what happens is the accelerator cover pedal thing slides off. We talked about this last week, I believe. Jams underneath the passenger well, and you keep accelerating forever. Well, this is the actual recall has hit NHTSA's database. And so that's why we're talking about it again. Some intrepid people on the internet realized, hey, I can just drill a rivet through this pad and put this on top of the accelerator pedal thing. But hey, for $100,000, you know, get better glue.
Yes, it would be a really bad occurrence in your Piggly Wiggly parking lot. And by the way, has anybody on the internet started calling these cyber sucks yet?
No, probably. I mean, I focus on positivity when I go on the internet. next one, Toyota, a rare entrant to the recall roundup. Toyota Prius, 55,690 2023 to 2024 Toyota Priuses. They left rear door, right rear door. Their assembly handles. Their handles are. What are they doing with their handles? Oh, there's a short circuit and that caused the door to open unexpectedly.
Yeah, the door Ooh. Opens randomly. And it's because of water intrusion in the vehicle. And I think that the example that they said if a large amount of water splashes on the, it's the switch for the rear door lock system, causes a short circuit, you can go driving off onto the highway and then all of a sudden the door opens unexpectedly. So that's obviously a problem. But they give the example of the large amount of water splashing is in a car wash. So maybe they need a car wash mode too.
I think they do. Everyone needs a car wash mode. Next up, hey, Toyota again, twice in 1 week. My word, 509 vehicles. The 2018 to 2021 Lexus LS 500. Fred, you have the 5000, right? Because you're better. The subject vehicles are equipped with a 10-way power front passenger seat unique to the executive package. That contains a long seat slide rail to allow for the seat to move forward and create room for rear sun. So basically, this sensor will break.
Basically, they put a, this 10-way executive seat. I don't know what it is, a captain's chair inside of these Lexuses. And the executive suite chair interferes with the occupant, the sensor that tells the car whether or not, occupant classification sensor, the sensor that tells the car that, you know, there's a person in the seat and that person is heavy enough to have an airbag deployed in their face, i.e. it's not a child or someone very small. And it can tell them, you know, how hard or how forcefully to deploy the airbag.
Depends what kind of executive they are. I think that's how they should rate
In this case, the executive package is not executing the airbag properly. So that's something that people really want to get into their dealer and have fixed. I don't think there's going to be a fix available until June, however. So keep an eye on that for the few hundred Lexus owners involved here.
We could drift into current politics if we really wanted to go with the executive airbag entry. Should we do that?
No.
All right.
That is a hard no. Last recall we have, Jaguar. Now this makes sense. 2,409 vehicles. This is the 2021 to 2023 Jaguar E-Pace. And this is the replacement airbag module is able to break through fascias where the weakening cut is out of specification. So I guess they had to replace some airbags on this, and the little cut where it explodes through is a little too weak.
Well, the passenger airbag deployment door weakening cuts are out of specification. So it looks like the little door that opens for the airbag to deploy, it may not open quite as easily as it should, and that airbags can tear when they get caught on it because the door is not opening fast enough for them, right, in simpler terms. And that allows, like, a torn airbag is, you know, not only do you lose the potential protection provided by having that giant pillow in front of you, you also risk the gases that are flowing into that airbag to fill it up so quickly can be released onto the occupants.
So the dashboard, if you look at it, is nice and smooth. But if you looked at the backside of the dashboard, you'd find that there are channels cut into it that make it weak in certain places so that when the airbag deploys, it can burst through easily and in a predictable manner. So that's what they're talking about. This is nothing that's visible to the passenger that's in the car, or the owner of the car, unless you take the dashboard off. We dealt with this a few years ago. Remember, Michael, when you were talking about the fact that the vinyl and the plastics in the dashboards are aging prematurely in the sun, and they're getting stiffer. We had questions about whether or not they were causing the potential for airbags to deploy incorrectly. A different issue, but similar concerns.
If you're affected by any of these recalls, contact your dealer, get some mushrooms, and then contact your car dealer and get it fixed.
Don't forget, the recalls are free.
Yes. No one will charge you for a recall. Right. Last thing I'm going to touch on is this is a fun article in streetsblog.org.
There you go.
Wow. Oh, look. Okay. And it talks about 5 car culture euphemisms we need to stop using. And that's what I like in an article, is something that comes right off the bat and tells me how to live my life. But it comes off of number one, traffic accidents. And I like this. Planes don't have accidents. They crash. Cranes don't have accidents. They collapse. Traffic, you know, this is a car crash. Very, you know, they're good little soldiers here with this. But, I agree. They're not an accident so much. They're
it's failure. It's something that I, you know, probably was guilty of a lot earlier in life and earlier in my career even. But, you know, the difference between calling something a crash and an accident isn't just kind of, you know, it's not just a different word. It implies something very different. An accident suggests that no one is at fault, or, you know, no, even the vehicle, no, nothing's at fault. It's just an accident. It happens. Whereas a crash suggests that there's some at least intentional act, or there, you know, someone really screwed up. So it's important. I think studies into, you know, that have looked into news articles about pedestrian crashes that use accident, were less likely to assign blame, you know, to the driver, and more likely to assign blame to the pedestrian as the person being at fault. So it, words matter, I guess is a good point here. And calling something an accident, calling a car crash a car accident, doesn't really put the blame where it maybe should be.
Agreed. The next one they have is transportation sector emissions. And I love this because just too broad. Well, it's not my car, it's the transportation sector. But the fact is, so roughly 78% of transportation sector emissions comes from SUVs, pickups, minivans, medium and heavy duty trucks, and passenger cars. Whereas the remaining, you know, 20% comes from everything else. So they suggest instead saying car and truck emissions, which I think would go a long way towards cleaning up the air we breathe.
Yeah, and that everything else also includes, you know, ships and boats and pipelines, which are sending cars to us and transporting the fuel for cars. So you could probably say they're over 80%.
There you go. Next up, they have traffic jams and congestion. Not saying that you're in traffic, but you are traffic.
You are traffic. I think that's a good point. Just to, you know, we tend to think of traffic as a thing that is outside of us that we have to face. But actually, when we're in it, we are traffic. There was a fun video that went along with that on the blog that I would encourage people to take a quick look at.
Yeah. So remember, you are traffic unless you are Steve Winwood, and at which point you were in traffic. Transportation engineering jargon. This is also a good one. This is what every industry and sector does was, hey, we're not going to use English anymore. We're going to create Scientology type words and whatnot to obfuscate what we do and make me sound much more impressive than we really are. Transportation engineers aren't just car infrastructure engineers. You know, you're just the guy. You're just the person. Like you're working on some infrastructure. Okay. Like, relax a little bit. So use layman's terms is the walk away there. The walk away, the takeaway, the takeout,
takeaway,
layaway. And the last one they have, basically a million other things such as ocean microplastics. Did you guys? Okay. Now I know Michael read this article. Fred, did you read this article?
I did.
You did. Damn it. Well, I can't ask you. Okay. For those of you playing the home game, ocean microplastics, what's the percentage you think comes from car tires? Hey, for those of you who guessed 78%, you're correct. What? 78% of ocean microplastics comes from car tires? That's mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, that's mind-blowing, and I think that number will, you know, if we met all of the goals of electrification by some of the timelines that have been set out without changing tire chemistries and without lightening vehicles, then we might see that percentage increase.
Well, I think the bad news is that this percentage will go down, because the reason the microplastics content from tires is so high is that tires shed their rubber as very, very small particles. And plastics that get dumped into the ocean take a while to turn into microplastics because they're big, gross objects. So if you were to take all the plastics being thrown into the ocean for, as trash, and first shredded them into tiny, tiny little particles, you would see that ratio shift towards a smaller content from the tires. That would not be a good thing, by the way, but that's part of this. There's a little bit of a bias in there. If you
You're
were
saying,
to,
tires have a leg up in achieving microplastic status
yeah,
because they shred off in
they're
smaller
self-grinding.
particles. Right.
So the next time you're in your
The
favorite seat,
self-grinding tire and the self-driving car.
I like that.
the next time you're in your favorite seafood restaurant, be sure to order the haddock with a little bit of Goodyear sauce.
Order, you can order the radial or the bias supply.
Hey, and with that, listeners, that's another episode. That's another hour and change of your life that you can never get back. But we thank you for spending time with us. Go to autosafety.org, donate. And I'll keep saying it.
Thank
that's
you.
It. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
For more information, visit www.autosafety.org.